exit the donut.
Again, my name is Rich, loving all things superhero. And with me today is...
I am Mike, and I am also loving all things superhero and dragon.
Okay, Amy's here. All right, guys. So kind of like a pretty big weekend. Actually, for me, I don't know about you guys, but it was like between like my... it was Father's Day. There's a whole bunch of stuff going on. We're really into the swing of things. I think there's like a new movie to watch every single 2 weeks or something like that. So I'm actually pretty happy. But the focus of today is basically going to be How to Train Your Dragon 2, the sequel to DreamWorks Animation's How to Train Your Dragon series, which I thought was a phenomenal, phenomenal movie. And then, of course, Mike and I were kind of talking before we started doing the podcast here a little bit. We're definitely going to kind of talk about some of the other big things are going to affect, including the Justice League.
It was Father's Day. There's a whole bunch of stuff going on. We're really into the swing of things. I think there's like a new movie to watch every single 2 weeks.
Or something.
So I'm pretty happy. But the focus of today is basically
that's not my computer. What was happening the last time.
On your computer.
It was on my computer last time, but that was not my computer this time.
You know what it was? If you leave your homepage opened up on your, I think like your Google Plus Hangout,
yeah,
it'll play if you go on that page even while you're recording in the Hangout.
Okay. Yeah.
Wait. Hey, who knew Podcast Sphere? All right, but now we know the entire over here. So again, we're also gonna be talking about besides How to Train Your Dragon 2, we also gonna be talking about the Justice League movie orgy that's gonna happen. Next couple of years, I think we're just going to get sexed up with DC, whether we like to or not. And we also have big talking about two big casting rumors and for both Ant-Man and also Doctor Strange, which I believe is going to be part of the Phase 3 of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, which is actually I'm looking forward to it, even though they say they've figured out things to like 2028 or something like that the entire way around. So let's go ahead and talk about How to Train Your Dragon. How to Train Your Dragon is based on a children's book by the British author Chrisetta Cowell, basically about the Viking world, and they actually mix like dragons into it. A friendlier Game of Thrones, as it were, the entire way around. And guys, let's just go right into it. I'm going to go ahead and say a couple words about it. I laughed. I cried. I thought certain parts were great. I felt there was something very classic about this as far as having like a hero's journey, but then I thought there was also something really, really fresh coming to the table. Probably the big thing that sticks out for me when it comes to this movie is the music. And I love, I'll tell you what, right from the get-go, you know, for me, I'll say it before and I'll say it every single podcast, one of the best things that movies can do better than books is having a music. You can get rid of all the dialogue and if music kind of carries you through. And I felt this was like adventure, it had love, it had all these like little, like nice little sincere moments, really, really, but it really had a nice little grand-esque, and really, really a great place to go as a series kind of work out. So, Mike, let's go ahead and start with you. What'd you kind of overall impressions of the movie?
Well, so I just finished up my review for our like little blog page, and you know, I gave it 4 stars. I thought it was really good. It was maybe, you know, I mean, I think my expectations were extremely high. Heading into this movie, I expected it to be my favorite movie of the year based on how much I love the first one. I will say that after the first preview, or maybe the second preview, I don't remember, that they released, I got a little worried in the same sense that I got worried of when I watched the X-Men, that it was maybe going to be not what I was expecting. It was very, very good. Really entertaining. Really wonderful, really great stories. There's everything in this movie. As you point out, you laughed, you cried. I didn't cry, but there were some very, very deep moments, some very emotional moments, very heavy moments, maybe a little too heavy, honestly, for, you know, the real kids. We had,
absolutely.
We had four kids in our group. I went with one of my friends and with Amy, and he brought his kids. So there were four kids. The youngest was my son, who's four, and the oldest was my friend's son, who's about 10. And we had sort of kind of even spacing. And they were all pretty into it. I would say my four-year-old did have some sort of shifting in his seats moments. It didn't keep him quite as well interested as the Lego Movie or Despicable Me 2, which were the best two movies I've seen with him in terms of that sort of thing. But it was really good. There's some great emotion in this movie. There's some little moments, like a perfect example, toward the beginning of the movie, there's a scene between Hiccup and Astrid sort of on a cliff face where they're, you know, making fun of each other. That's, you don't see it in animated films really. And it's just, it's such a human moment. So great. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and the action was really good. We saw it in 3D. I don't know if you did. I don't know that 3D was as quite as good as I expected it to be, but it was good. It was very entertaining. You know, it's just a great movie about a boy and his dog, except this time there's a lot more than just the boy and his dog.
I like it a lot. Amy, what do you think about overall impressions of the movie?
You know, I hadn't seen the first one really until about 4 months ago, so I didn't get to see it in the theaters and get, like, the full effect of the big screen. So I was really looking forward to the second one because the first one was so good, and I really liked it. It was, like Mike said, it was much deeper than I expected, but not in a bad way. I really enjoyed it. I thought it was great in a lot of ways. Even though there were certain characters that you would only spend small snippets of time with and then you wouldn't see them for a while, it's like there was a lot of story arcs for all the characters, and I really enjoyed it. Like I said, it was very deep, but it was very well done. And the 3D, for me, I thought was great. I enjoyed it with the flying and stuff like that, and so you kind of felt like you were experiencing it from their point of view. So that was fun.
Cool. You know, it's funny how Mike was funny. You brought up a great point that I was saying about the movie. That interaction between Astrid and, you know, I felt like this was a movie that kind of catered to a specific audience age, in the sense that, kind of like the Harry Potter series, that it kind of matured, like in the last, like 2 or 3 years, where, you know, you're getting to that age, you know, like where you're getting comfortable, it's still adolescent, like whatever, but I mean the characters are supposed to be, if I'm not mistaken, is it 20 years old, is that right? It's not like what Hiccup's age is supposed to be.
Yeah, and I did some research when I was writing the review. They're 20, well, Hiccup's 20, they don't really say anybody else, but it takes place 5 years after the first story, which they explicitly say in the movie also, so.
And that's a really, really big jump. You know, Mike, you were speaking of having like Despicable you know, me as a stylization, you know, this, I'm a big fan if someone can get scenery right, and I was really, really amazed at, like, the use of waters. There's a scene at the very, very beginning of the movie where they're watching, you know, I'll do a little spoiler, so here's a little spoiler, pause it, you know, for a little bit, but they're doing that little sheep race at the beginning, right? And there's a fantastic scene where Stoic and Hagar are kind of like talking, and they kind of lean back, and you see the way that the lighting is hitting their faces, and I'm like, wow, that's a pretty big jump. So overall, you know, visually, I thought this movie was fantastic. I love the colors. Let's go ahead and talk about some of the characterizations in there. You know, you had I can't ever pronounce his name. Is it Jay?
Baruchel.
Yeah, Baruchel. You know, he's got that really. One of my favorite movies that he's in is, I just completely forgot about it. It's the one where he's trying
sorcerer
to get the
girl. One?
What's up?
The sorcerer, where the sorcerer's apprentice.
And no. It's the movie where he's trying to get the girl. It's a very underrated. Now I'm gonna have to do like a little Google here, like in the middle of our little podcast. But you know, he's got. What's up?
He was in This Is the End last year that came out right around the same time. I would say that those are not movies targeted.
Have you ever seen She's Out of My League?
No, I haven't.
Oh my, okay. That's I'm gonna tell you right now, that's an underrated comedy. like Bedazzled and like a couple other movies I can go off right now. Very, very underrated.
Sorry, did you just bedazzle me?
Have you seen Bedazzled with Brendan Fraser? Elizabeth Hurley as the devil and the genie thing. I tell you what, bro, that's a... I guess we'll go off into this a little bit, but who's the name of the Ghostbuster who just passed away? Harold Ramis.
Yeah.
And he was the director of that movie and of Bedazzled. We're going off on a tangent here, ladies and gentlemen. and on the set was John Cleese, was visiting from Monty Python. And of those of you who haven't seen Bedazzled, you know, it's a fantastic movie, but he basically gets, like, a bunch of, like, wishes, right? Not, like, the standard genie 3 wishes, but he gets, like, 7 or something like that. His first wish is that I want to be rich and powerful, he says. So he ends up being a Colombian drug lord. And the guy comes up to him, he's like, hola, mister, like, you know, oh, ¿cómo estás? And he's like, ¿cómo dices? No habla español. Oh, no, hold on, momento, esto, habla español. He basically... in the language that he's sorry that he can't speak that language, and then just realizes. And John Cleese of Monty Python said that he had never seen a comedy shtick situation like that, and it was new and fresh. And that's a compliment if you're coming from Monty Python by coming up with a new type of like comedy the entire way around. But anyway, Jay, you know, She's Out of My League is a fantastic movie, you know, where he basically, you know, Jay Bouchard really, really plays up the reluctant, you know, you could call him the hero. In this one, he's a little bit more of a grander-esque of a hero because it's in Viking times. But overall, he'll play, like, that attitude quite nice. And he's got, like, that nerdy voice. Like, do you guys, like, is this recognizable? Like, did any of the other voices? Yeah. Go for it. I mean, what do you think? What other voices?
That was one thing because, like I said, I only saw the first one probably about 4 or 5 months ago with Mike and the kids. And we were watching it, and I'm like, oh, my gosh, I know that voice, you know, because, like you said, he's got a very distinctive voice. And I'm sitting here trying to place it. And I'm like, oh my God, it's the kid from The Sorcerer's Apprentice. Because that was I haven't seen the one you were talking about. And I'm like, but that's what I remember him from. And I'm just like, oh my gosh, he's such a nerd, but he's great, you know, and he's fun. And he has a lot of the same mannerisms that Hiccup actually does, you know. And so I don't know if they do the motion capture with him or not, but he even looks like, you know, the kid, so.
Oh, sure. Let's go ahead and talk about some of the other voices. Of course, we had I think this is a joke from the first one. Is anyone from, like, Nordic mythology Scottish? is that what, like, the, you know, so you got Gerald Butler, you've got Craig Ferguson, of course, coming back as Hagar, you know, who kind of, and then, of course, you throw in Kate Blanchett into this role, you know, into the role of, oh gosh, what's her character's name? I am ill prepared for this one, guys.
Galadriel. Oh no, I'm sorry. That's something total.
That's not right.
How dare you, sir?
I don't know the right answer, but that is certainly the wrong one.
Valka, and you know, she certainly had that. You know, of course, she's in English, and so she kind of started doing a little bit of her like little accent as well. The villain in this, who is Demon Hunsell?
Yeah, I didn't know him.
You know, from Armistead, right? Wasn't that the movie that he was kind of famous?
The most recent thing I think he's been in that's been spectacular that people would recognize him from was from Blood Diamond.
Yeah. Absolutely. He was
the diamond slave father in Blood Diamond.
Yeah, I didn't realize that was him.
For those who don't know who I'm talking about, if you happen to catch the premiere or the first trailer of the new Guardians of the Galaxy, when they're catching Star-Lord for the first time, he's the guy who's like, whoop. good job, guys. We sound like a bunch of owls between Central and Eastern time. Awesome. I love it. Let's keep it up. Who played the villain, you know, like the entire way, and I thought he was fantastic. I don't know. He had the dreads kind of going on. And then, a little nod to Game of Thrones, you had Kit Harington in there, Jon Snow himself.
Who did he play?
He played Drago. Not Drago.
The beard.
The guy who's like the I got burned, you know. But he ended up turning, you know, I don't know, spoil it, but
he's the cool. He's the man meat for the girl.
Oh, for Kristen Wiig's character. So, you know, let's talk about like classic themes. I'm gonna go ahead and say that like this had I got flashbacks of so many other movies like The Lion King.
Yeah.
You know, that's a strong one. You know, that reluctant hero, but I think it's such a different dimension to make like the other person you're playing off of nonverbal, which is basically the Night Fury hiccup. You know, and there's a lot of like clues, and I don't know if you guys noticed that they particularly did a lot of stuff in the movie where if there was dialogue that was going on different for, you know, for the audience, you can understand that they had plenty of stuff going on in the background for the kids.
The dragons interacting. Yeah.
I think really want to watch it again because I really, really loved all of the stuff that was going on in the background.
Oh.
And when I did catch it, it was great.
Absolutely.
Totally wonderful.
Dragon interactions and, you know, their human-ass qualities and stuff and the flirting and stuff like that was great.
Oh, sure. Let's go ahead and talk about some of the relationships, you know. I kind of started writing it down, like, notes about the whole entire thing. And so, of course, they matured, but this one had, I think, really, and of course on Father's Day weekend, of all things.
What a great opening weekend, yeah.
What?
Sorry, there was a bug. Okay. I had to whack a bug.
Did a dragon fly in your room?
Okay. It was kind of a big bug. I don't like bugs. They're not my thing.
That's cool, man. Keep a cool hot shot. I like that.
That is not Richie. I love that you have a Stitch on your bookshelf behind you.
What? What are you talking about?
That Stitch?
Where? What are you talking about?
That stuffed animal, the Lilo and Stitch?
Yes,
that's awesome.
Stitches in there. And then, of course, if you see my... I am well adept of being a nerd over here to be able to...
You know that the guy who wrote and directed this movie, he also wrote and directed the first one, but his biggest sort of thing that he had done prior to How to Train Your Dragon was Lilo and Stitch. He wrote
Well, you know what? You know, I have a buddy named Peter, and him and I, he was the one who first told me that Night Fury reminded him of Stitch.
Yeah, well, they're really both at their core a boy and his dog stories. Of course, Lilo and Stitch is a girl, but their core stories are a boy and his dog.
Right. Well, even more so. One of the things that I appreciate about the movie series was we're like at the end of the first one. So everyone knows that Hiccup loses his leg, or ankle on down, right?
Yeah.
And that was like a totally like normal thing to like, you know, it's something he's just gonna have to go with. And I think that's probably the best way to kind of, you know, I don't know if they had to do it or whatever, but I'm glad they did because it in a non sympathetic way, you know, they kind of, I think there's more kids who can identify with that character now. And then certainly...
Well, and it draws a parallel between him and Toothless, too, and their bond, you know.
Oh, absolutely. And then in a fell swoop, you know, they did the same thing with, you know, if for those of us who weren't, you know, able to have two parents with us growing up, you know, they were able to talk about, you know, reconciling, you know, like with your parent and then the loss of a parent. I mean, even though... You know, we won't, whatever, spoiler alert, you know, whatever, turn off, like, the little blog, but let's talk about that theme. How did the kids handle it when all that stuff kind of started going down? As far as meeting the mom, and then later when the dad pieces out?
Yeah, so, I actually wasn't, I wasn't sitting next to Morgan, I was sitting next to Drew.
Okay.
Morgan was sitting next to another boy that was my friend's son. So I don't know how Morgan reacted, but she liked it and she didn't ever come and grab me. There were some scary moments and intense moments in this movie, particularly around the action involving both of the parents that Drew got a little heady with. I honestly think, you know, Drew's a little too young to have the sort of relationship stuff hit him. With right. Morgan, with Morgan, it certainly could. Obviously, for you, with the way you grew up, with your dad being in the service and being away a lot of the time, you can totally relate to that. And I, you know, I think a lot of times these movies, you know, it really, your experience with them is comes from so much on how you do relate to stuff. Amy made the comment, my favorite movie last year was Despicable Me 2, and at its core, that movie is about a single father with his kids trying to sort of keep them from running too far astray while also trying to take over the world, which is, you know, a close parallel for my life.
Yeah.
You know, and
I just want to say you look fantastic today, by the way.
So, you know, and
please
so
don't let him.
You know, we think the same thing. For me, the stuff with the parents, in the first movie, Gerard Butler's character, the stoic character, the father character, is really very archetypal. He's
sure.
the strong father who doesn't understand his son and blah, 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 blah. This movie, they really expand it tremendously. He has a lot of depth of character, and there's this whole sort of the old way of doing things versus the new way of doing things. In the first movie, the old way was always wrong. It was always bad. In this movie, you see that the father has a point in some things. And there's even a really nice parallel where he's dismissed his dad's point of view, and then he finds his mom, and she gives him the same answer about the guy being unreasonable, and he's like, "What?" You know, but Gerard Butler's stoic. It has some really wonderful moments. Probably for me, the best moment in the whole film is when he sees whatever her name is, the mom, for the first time in 20 years or whatever it's been. It's really powerful. It's a very well done scene.
How about you? Did you get affected by that scene? Like, did that hit you on any kind of like level?
You know, like I said, there was a range of emotions. There was a couple times I did not cry, but there were a couple moments where, you know, it was tense and it was emotional, and you felt like you had grown to have to care about these characters because you've watched them struggle through things and you feel kind of a bond with them. And so when they experience pain or joy or sorrow, you kind of experience a little bit of that with them. And so, yeah, that scene was great. The scene after Stoic dies and then he kind of lashes out at Toothless, like, I can totally relate to that in a little bit different type of way. I remember when you know, because my mom passed away when I was in junior in high school. And so I remember being, as much as I loved my dad, I remember being angry with him and wishing, like, and he didn't even cause in any way what happened to my mom. But you know what I mean? But, like, you kind of tend to lash out and, like, you know, even though Toothless did cause it to happen, you know, it was not him. And so it's just one of those things, like, you know, there's so the emotions that run through you and different things and how you, different things that one part that may not have even, you know, affected one person is going to, you know, can totally affect somebody else because of their experiences and how they relate to different things. So I think there was a lot in this movie that, you know, almost everybody could have found one thing that.
I think they went through the whole gauntlet of emotions that have to even do with family in the first place.
Right.
Like, I found myself, when he got up with his mom, I was thinking about my mom, right? I was like, you know, oh, you know, like, what would happen if I lost my mom or something like that? You know, I'm very much like a mama's boy, you know, even though, like, with a family. But then, what's up?
Not even though. Just a mama. Right. Any sentence.
Well, you know,
it's okay.
Well, thank you, Mister. I like that entire way. You know, I'll admit it. That scene where he walks up to her, like, afterwards, I thought that is hands down one of the most romantic things I've seen
in
any movie for, like, a while. Like, that was extremely tender, and I haven't felt that from an animated movie that emotionally moved probably since the movie Up. When it comes to, like, the idea. Did you guys ever see the movie Up?
Yes. Don't ask Mike. He was not a fan.
What? Are you serious? What's the matter with you?
It's okay.
It's not a children's movie, really.
It's not a kid's movie.
It's not gonna be animated.
I mean, come on. You got to know. Like, Pixar is... What was that? Mike, what's wrong?
It's a good movie. It's just horrible. Like, totally horrible. The first 15 minutes of that movie where they go from kids to growing old to the old man losing his wife, and like I wanted to throw something into TV. I was like, I felt like I was watching a Lifetime movie. It's like, what is this? It's gonna pass every kid by, and most people in their teens and 20s and 30s. No, it was a fine movie. You are correct though that it was. There is some really heady and heavy things in this movie, and there are some movies that do a good job of piecing pieces of that together. For instance, with the Lego movie, with the scene at the end with the father, went with the father in the stairs. There's some things with the daughters and Gru and the mom in Despicable Me that's much more delicate and heavy, but it's not as pervasive. This movie has a lot of stuff, and it's got it throughout the whole film.
Right. Well, and I remember that scene you're talking about, Richie. Where he sees his wife after the 20 years and he approaches her. There's the scene right after that where as soon as he touches her hand or her face, the tear goes down her face. You know, she tear leaks out. Yeah. And Drew turned to Mike and said, "Why is she crying?" You know, so there's, you know, as a 4-year-old, he doesn't understand, you know. And so there's a lot of stuff, like you said, that is a little bit, you know.
Well, yeah, we are getting to that age where, like, if you watch, you know, I think Toy Story kind of set the standard for being able to speak to an adult, but really was a movie for children. Shrek was shamelessly direct with its innuendos the entire way around, just shameless. I mean, that's the first thing I think, Mike, you told me about. We had a conversation probably like 10, 15 years ago when the first Shrek movie came out, and we were talking about it, and like, it's the jokes are just gonna shoot right over the kids, and you know, in a way you feel kind of, you know, you're kind of snickering like a little bit, like, oh my goodness, this is so
weird. Parents are acting like children, and the children are acting
absolutely, you know, certainly, you know, so ridiculous, I'm like, but I'm really, really happy with the movie overall. If anyone hasn't seen it, you know, all the characters are really taken to another place. I'm glad they didn't. They emphasized characters, like Mike was saying, with Stoic, introducing like the mom into the whole entire lineage, kind of shaking it up a little bit. The background, you know, the background people still provided what they needed to. Jonah Hill's character, Kristen Wiig, and whoever the guy who plays McLovin, he's the voice of the big kid.
Christopher McClass.
Yeah, thank you very, very much. Or whatever the villain is that he plays in Kick-Ass. So, and then the comments about the movies, you know, like I'm going to write up a little thing about it myself, like on a little blog, but highly recommended. But please know that going into the movie, if your kid is not of like a certain age and hasn't been exposed to that, I think because it's laid on so pretty heavy, like at least in the movie like Lion King and Disney and stuff, it hits once, bam, you're done and everything, and it's very simplified. This one, it's done both to the dragons and it's done both to the family. Like, you know, the parallel of, like, the alpha. Oh, that was sad, man. Like, the alpha dragon thing, I'm like, oh, no.
Yeah, Morgan and Drew both turned to me at that point in the movie. So that we should say that this is at the end of the second act. Mm-hmm. And so there's a lot of really great parallelism in this movie, too. At the beginning of the movie, you get the dragon race, but then you see Toothless and Hiccup, and they're, you know, they're exploring and finding the new world and all that, and they're, you know, they're testing this sort of you know, flying device that he's invented, and he gets himself in trouble, and Toothless has to save him, right? And then there's a moment at the end of the movie where Toothless is falling in the same way, and Hiccup has to save him, and so there's this symbiotic relationship. Well, at the same time, at the end of the second act, you see Stoic battling Drago or whatever the bad guy's name is, and they're these big, gruff, enormous men that are oversized compared to all of their contemporaries, and they're good versus evil, and they're waging war on each other, and at the same time, you see these two dragons that are bigger than all of the other dragons, and they're waging war against each other, and in both cases, the bad guy wins.
Sure.
And both of my kids looked to me and said, the good guys are going to win, right? As it was playing out. And then the good guys don't win. And that's a very interesting story element. First of all, it makes the story more interesting and real because there's more complex conflict, right? But, sure. But more importantly, the good guys don't always win in life. And a lot of these movies, the good guys always win. And so this death and loss makes this a much more complex world that, as you pointed out earlier, is something like a Harry Potter that we can maybe grow with and the kids can grow with over time.
Absolutely. You know, it is, you know, Amy, what are your thoughts on, you know, like the themes that kind of go through it? You know, like, do you think it's appropriate or do you think?
Yeah, you know, I do. In a lot of ways, it can be a little emotional and deep at times, but I think a lot of it's going to go over most kids' heads unless it's something that, you know, strikes home for them in particular with their experience. So, I mean, I do think, you know, with any movie and with young kids, you probably have to be aware of what's going to take place in it so that you can, you know, prepare them for or be prepared yourself as a parent or, as you know, as an adult for what they might experience in it. Mm-hmm. But I don't think, I mean, there were, like I said, a couple moments where I remember hearing Drew where he would say, this is a little scary, you know, because there are some dark moments in the fights you know, the lighting is low and, you know, it has a vibe where it's just, you know, something bad could happen. And so there were a couple moments like that where I think if it was in, you know, the living room and the light, you know, in the middle of the day, it wouldn't have been an issue for him. But in a dark theater, it can be a little scary for a younger kid. But the actual emotional scenes, I think, you know, most kids, for the most part, young kids, not all kids, but most of them haven't really experienced those type of issues where I think really it's going to sink into them the way it would where we've had a lot more life experience and maybe might relate to one of those things more closely. But
we took the kids a couple weeks ago when Maleficent came out also. And Maleficent, by the way, also is very good. What I would say is in terms of relevance for kids and appropriateness for kids, this movie's fine, I think, for any kid of any age as long as they're not overwhelmed by, you know, action, violence in movies, right? Okay. I mean, there is that. So there is some of that. There's a rape scene in Maleficent. There is a real rape scene. It's not shown as sexual rape, but there is a scene in Maleficent where a man takes innocence from a woman character and literally rips her wings off of her body and leaves her to die. And it was very confusing. And the aftermath of that is very painful. The character that it happens to is crying out in anguish and agony for more than a split second on screen. It's maybe over a minute, maybe, I don't know. It felt like a long time when we were watching it. And I had a 4-year-old and a 7-year-old with me, and they enjoyed the movie, but that was a very, very dark moment. And there were some other really dark moments in that movie. This movie, all of the deep stuff is a little bit higher level that I don't think is going to be.
Right. You know, I would say, you know, my again, you know, for me, I don't have kids, so I wouldn't know. You know, of course, like, you know, from the adult, that hero's journey is really, really easy to latch on to. There's nothing that you shouldn't, you know, I think it's a wonderful journey. I think it's an important lesson. Like, if you do have kids, I like the idea that you don't see that the good guys win all the time, you know, but in the end, you know, sticking to, like, you know, your morals and, you know, that being, like, reluctant, you know, like, you know, sometimes, and that's a great thing, you know, like, I would have felt like if I was a kid and I can see this guy, like, I don't know what I want to do, but he ends up, you know, kind of, like, taking over the role and, you know, becoming, like, chieftain and, like, all that good stuff. I think that's a very, very important lesson, you know, as far as, like, the movie that could be directed, like, for the kids now. I hope that we don't get to a time where kids are so desensitized, because a movie like Maleficent, I haven't seen it yet, but from what you're telling me, I don't know if that would have worked when I was younger.
No way they would have released that movie 20 years ago.
Absolutely. No, so
it's really good. It didn't get very good reviews, but I really thought it was good. It's a little over the top in terms of pushing its message, and you could argue whether the message in that movie is women empowerment versus male misogynism, or if it's, you know, industrial modern world versus environmental natural state. You could read either one into it, but they're both good. I mean, it's good.
Have you seen Wicked the musical?
I actually haven't, and I'm embarrassed to say I'm sure I would love it.
Amy, have you seen Wicked at all?
No, I haven't. It's performed here in St. Louis live several times, and I've just never.
Oh, okay. So they're doing a live action version of this. There's several movies coming out, actually. Kind of a little tangent here, ladies and gentlemen. There are a couple of movies based on musicals that are going to be coming out. I heard Wicked is going to be happening as well, and from what I hear, I guess we'll talk about it in later podcasts. I think there's too many parallels between the story of Wicked and Maleficent, as far as like, right. What's up?
I think you're right. The podcasts that I've listened to that related to Maleficent, some of the articles I read, that from people who didn't like it felt like it was a ripoff of Wicked. I haven't seen Wicked, but that's what they said.
That's one of the big things I think I'm going to be afraid that I'm going to go into it, because I kind of like, you know, I like Angelina Jolie sometimes, like in certain movies.
It's not timeless,
yeah.
But it's a good movie. It's entertaining.
Okay.
And it's fun. It's done by the guy who directed it. It's a first-time director. And it was written by the same woman that did some of the good Disney movies like Mulan, I think she wrote, and maybe Beauty and the Beast, I think, maybe. But the guy who directed it, it's his first time directing, but he was a major visual effects person on huge action, special effects heavy movies, the most famous of which is Avatar. And you see a lot of that influence in Maleficent.
That tells you everything you need to know if you worked on Avatar. My goodness. And
the beautiful world.
I think like anything else, it all depends on what perspective you have going in, what your expectations are. Because for myself, I have very low expectations of Maleficent, not from critics' reviews or anything like that, but from the previews, I was like, and I remember expressing that to Mike. I'm like, I don't know if I'm going to like this. I'm like, I didn't get good vibes from the previews. And I was very pleasantly surprised. But I think because I went in with such low expectations, and that's the reason I was really worried about How to Train Your Dragon 2, because Mike, the first one spoke to him so much, and he loved it so much, and I was like, oh my gosh, please let this be good, because I'm like, mess with the second one, it can ruin the whole, you know, it takes a little luster out of the first one for you sometimes, you know, because they can wreck the story so bad. So, I mean, I was glad that it did, you know, I don't know if it was as good as he had hoped for, but, I mean, I was very impressed. I thought it was as good as the first one.
Good stuff, guys. I like this all the way around. But you know what? So How to Train Your Dragon, definitely recommend. You'll see Mike has his little blog review up a little bit. I'll put mine up in a little bit. Amy, I think you should start writing too. stuff on there if you want to. But go ahead and go see it. Buy the soundtrack. That's a big recommendation for me. I think it's a fantastic soundtrack. All right, guys. Let's go ahead and kind of move forward with a couple of other geeky things to talk about. Let's talk about the DC Orgy that's going to be coming up. So, okay. So if I'm not mistaken, you know, I sent this article to Mike, and when I saw it, I was just like, wait a second. I go, how many movies do they want to throw out in just one time? And sometimes I feel that DC is trying to do opposite of Marvel Cinematic Universe. And I think anything that they do is going to be able to be perceived in such a way that it's kind of seeing like it's trying to be as similar to the Marvel Cinematic Universe or as different due to the fact that Marvel did it one way. So the big parallel is that they're going to do a big team one first, and then break out into all the other ones. If I'm not mistaken, Mike, is that correct?
Do you want me just to run it down real quick for you?
Yeah, give us a little breakdown of how it's gonna roll.
So this is rumor. It's not confirmed, but right. It's been reported by a bunch of sources that I trust, and they've said it's, you know, obviously it can change. It's a couple years out, but so right now they have May 2016 Batman versus Superman.
Okay.
And July 2016 is Shazam, which I guess is Captain Marvel. You can probably go into that. Christmas 2016, so that's the third movie in 2016, The Sandman, which I think is Joseph Gordon-Levitt's involved in that. May 2017 is Justice League. Sure. July 2017 is Wonder Woman.
Uh-huh.
Christmas 2017 is a Flash and Green Lantern mashup, and then Man of Steel 2 in May of 2018. So over 25 months, that's 7 movies.
And that's in addition to everything that's going on. Listen, I don't know about anyone else. Let's kind of walk through some of these characters. First of all, how do we feel about Daredevil being Batman, by the way? I think he sucks a big goat. I am not a fan. Ben Affleck, I would give him that he's a good director, but his acting, keep it You can hold on to it. Hang out with your buddy Matt Damon or something like that, because his acting is terrible. in my head. And that's just my opinion. What do you guys think of Matt Damon? Did we talk about this before in another podcast of Ben Affleck? Like, do you like the idea of it, even going into it? Or Amy, what do you think? Like, do you care? Yeah,
Matt Damon or Ben Affleck, he's hit or miss for me. I only saw a portion of Daredevil.
You know what?
I was at the gym, so I was like on the treadmill, and even that was bad.
I'm thinking if you need like a some kind of like a homemade enema, you should watch Daredevil. It'll make you just like, you're like, oh, this is so terrible. I got to get something out of my system. I got to rub my tongue with a Brillo pad or something like after.
Well, I liked he died like last year. I liked his character. I don't know the comics, so I don't know. It was not good enough to get a sequel, and so that's a lot.
You know, on a note on that, by the way, I got a chance to speak to him over the phone when I was at UCF for a little bit of time, and it was when he was doing the Green Mile. And after the Green Mile, they were doing like a Q&A session, and I'm like, I'll try calling from UCF all the way to like wherever they're screening. And I actually got patched through. And of course, I like the idiotic thing. It's just like getting a read. I'm like, whoa, this is so cool. I can hear myself. And anyway, I asked about him, like the special effects, like in the movie. And if anyone hasn't seen Green Mile, that's another fantastic movie. But yeah, I would say that was like one of those big, like, I'm glad that color, it was brought up because the original character of Wilson Fisk was white. And so in the new Netflix series, he's actually going to be played by Vincent D'Onofrio. He was the villain he was from Law & Order. Wow, there's so many tangents. You can go on this, by the way. But it didn't really matter because you didn't really care if he was like... I would have been more concerned. I think there was talks way back when in the day of making Captain America... Will Smith was supposed to be Captain America, and they wanted Beyonce to be Wonder Woman. And I think there's some characters where... you can kind of like, it really shouldn't matter like about race or anything like that. But I think I hope they don't put it in there just for the sake of getting some kind of, minority group in there just for the sake of getting, because for me, it would be like, that doesn't make sense to me if they did those kind of, especially for those, like, those particular characters. That's just my opinion. It's not being racial. That's coming from a minority person. I just think whoever the original person to create the character, that's your guidelines that you should follow the entire way through. Well, so who else we got in the movie? Henry Cavill as Man of Steel. Real quick, did you guys like Man of Steel?
I did.
Oh, jeez, of course you did.
It was okay. I mean, it was not great. It was entertaining. The end was weird with all the kissing among the ashes and.
Oh, jeez. Yeah. Amy, what were your favorite parts about that movie?
Man of Steel we're talking about now? I really liked everything up until the destruction of the city scene that lasted 10 and a half, like 20 minutes at the end.
Sure.
I really liked the first part of the development with his family, and the bus scene with the tornado was great, I thought, with his dad, that moment where words didn't even have to be spoken, it was just the look on their face from one where he told him to stop, I thought that was a great moment. And, the interaction with Lois Lane and him, I thought, their interaction was great. So I really liked it. The end was, the last 20 minutes were weird, but the majority of the story, I have never liked any of the Superman movies. So it was the first one where I was like, I'll watch another.
What's up? I'm sorry, one more time, I missed that last little part.
That's coming from a place where I never liked any of the original Supermans or the storylines, so for me, but that doesn't necessarily mean it was phenomenal. It was just, I had never liked any of them, and I thought he did a good job of portraying a young Superman.
Oh, all right, let's go ahead and run down, for those of you who don't know who these other characters are, you have Shazam, and now that, have you guys heard that Aquaman got officially cast?
I did. It's Carl Drogo from Game of Thrones.
It's
right?
Drogo. another
oh, yeah, Jason Momoa or something.
Yeah, Jason Momoa, who played Hercules, who Dwayne Johnson also is going to play Hercules. And then Dwayne Johnson is supposed to be involved with DC, and the rumor was that Dwayne The Rock Johnson was supposed to be Aquaman. Now, the Aquaman's cast, I think Captain Marvel is actually going to be Dwayne Johnson, I think. That might be a rumor in my head, or at least Jon Stewart.
The rumor I heard was he was going to be Green Lantern.
Yeah, Jon Stewart's Green Lantern, so which is perfectly fine. The Sandman, mixed up in these movies, is kind of like the equivalent of mixing up the Guardians of Galaxies. It's a property that's not as known as, say, like an Iron Man or something, or like a Batman or something, but certainly it did exist, and there are a lot of diehard fans, so the Sandman's going to be a little bit more of a classic character, so I think that's going to be a nice little influence. And, of course, you have the Justice League movie, and who knows which iteration of the Justice League they're going to put in there, but we do know that Aquaman's going to be there, definitely Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman. And then it says the Flash and Green Lantern. I'm wondering if they're going to do that as a mashup, because I hope they kind of do it as separate movies, but if they do as separate movies, that kind of concerns me, because I actually do like, again, what's going on with Arrow and the Flash on TV. Amy, have you seen any of the previews for, like, The Flash or, like, Arrow?
We watched The Arrow, and...
Oh, yeah, did you guys finally finish it?
We finally did, yes.
Oh, man, tell me what you guys... Let's talk about Arrow for a second. I'll be more than happy to talk about Arrow. What do you guys think of it?
Go ahead, Amy.
That sounds like a loaded question now. I'm a little worried.
you like that? You like what I just did? That's right, baby. These podcasts are anywhere. I like it. Ooh, go for it. Like, was it?
No, I really like it. I thought it was a good ending. I like when they leave, you know, as much as I hate to have to wait for, you know, the next season, I like when they end it where you want more, and you're not, it doesn't, like, wrap it up in a nice little bow, you know, package bow and all that. So I thought it's great, and I'm really looking forward to Flash, too, because I really liked his character when he was on, and that was before he was actually Flash, but, you know.
Oh, good. Mike, what do you think about, like, the series? Like, how do you think, like, Arrow as a TV series is? You know, like, I think it's one of the best on TV right now,
It's one of my favorite shows, even though it's on the teeny bopper romance channel. But I really like it. I think the characters are really strong. I was really confused, honestly, by the last two episodes, because they had so many storylines that they had woven through two seasons, basically, and they were tying everything back together so quickly that it, like, I was forgetting who was who, honestly, at the very end. But I really liked it. I thought it was really good. The moment with Oliver and Felicity in the house and afterwards is, you know, we were sitting on the couch looking at each other going, oh, my God.
Right?
And then, of course, they're outsmarting everybody.
I was, like, super excited for them. You know, yeah. the little girl in me that loves the love story. And I'm like, it was all a fake lie? I'm like, maybe not.
It's really good, and Amy's right. I want more, and I was sad that the season was over, which is exactly what the showrunner should want. And I can't wait for The Flash. I think Barry Allen looks really funny and fun, and a perfect complement to the dark, dank world that Arrow's in.
Sure.
So I'm excited. Arrow's better than Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., and I'm a Marvel guy.
Oh, absolutely, you know, and this is where I wish DC could listen to this podcast, because if you really, really want to go about it from an angle that hasn't been done before, include those, if you can somehow get the rights to get those, and Mike's gone, and if
no,
you can, I know you are, I can't, your icon, it's gone, so I would say that it's a fantastic, fantastic series. I'm glad that they treat it like a comic book where you have all these arcs kind of culminating into, like, one big event, and they kind of get to restart it, but they still leave you kind of, like, hanging. I think The Flash is going to be absolutely fantastic. I like how it's a little bit more lighthearted. And if DC's smart, they take those properties, take those characters, and throw them in, because that's something new. You've never had anything. I mean, certainly there have been a million shows that started out, but not us with such a fan base as this one, you know, having a comic first, having a TV show, and then throwing the TV show into, like, a bigger screen, you know, I think Stephen Amell would be fantastic to be Green Arrow in that series. And I hope, you know, there's a rumor going around where they wanted Ryan Reynolds to be Flash way back when in the day before he was Green Lantern, which I thought was horrible. That's another Enema movie. You know, watch
I like Green Lantern.
Oh my God! You know what? We'll save that.
The comic book movies are so much about the bad guy, and the bad guy in that movie is terrible. Oh, but I liked Green Lantern. I thought it was fun, and I mean, the CGI mask was sort of funny and weird. He just walk around naked on set the whole time when he had
exactly. You know what I did the entire movie? I was just like, wow, he's actually the entire time I'm not thinking Ryan Reynolds. I'm like, wow, he gets to go home with Blake Lively. I'm pretty jealous. She's a hot chick right there. All right, guys, let's go ahead and wrap up here, like, real quick. Mike, how are we doing on time over here?
We're a little less than an hour, I think.
Okay. Let me go ahead and kind of, like, talk about the other two things, like, real quick. We've got, of course, Doctor Strange looks like it's going to have its director. Not its director. It's casting. And we got Benedict Cumberbatch, who played the villain again in the second Star Trek movie, the J.J. Abrams version. Currently also plays Sherlock Holmes, the BBC show. And he was also the voice for some villain for something that just came up fairly recently.
He's the dragon in Hobbit.
Yes, in Desolation of Smog. Thank you. Oh my, look at you, you little nerd.
Yeah, well.
Look at you, you little nerd. I love it.
Yeah.
I love it so much. And then, of course, the other casting rumor is that, I believe I'm going to be Dr. Strange. You have Tom Hardy, who is... I just want to go ahead and record and say that I knew Tom Hardy when he first hit the scene way back when in the day when he played the villain on Star Trek Nemesis, which was the last of the Next Generation cast, which makes me cry because it was such a terrible marketed movie and could have been 10 times better, but he played the villain in that. And I thought he was absolutely fantastic then, and I'm really, really happy.
I had to look up who Tom Hardy was because I had no idea who you're talking about.
Bane! Oh! I love you to die!
The dude is in Batman... Dark Knight Rises, he's the dude with the thing on his face, the bad guy. That's a bad, like, movie to know who he is, because I didn't know it was him because he his face.
Inception and Lawless, though.
He
was very good in Lawless.
There's a movie where he did, like, an MMA fighter one, and then there's another movie.
Warrior.
Yes. He is fantastic. And I mean, he really, anything he touches, you know, Christopher Nolan says basically that's why he's the best at Bane, because he can actually do stuff with his voice and his look. You don't have to see him actually talking about it as long as, you know, you could have done, like, whatever. It took two people to make Darth Vader come to life, James Earl Jones and whoever the guy was inside him. But then for this guy, it was rare to have a person to have such a physical presence, you know, for the character of Batman. So, do you guys like either one of these things? I want to say thank goodness that we're actually casting a British person as a hero.
I'm a huge Cumberbatch fan, so I'm good with anything he's in.
Oh, like the entire way?
One way or the other.
Mike, what do you think?
I love Benedict Cumberbatch. I'm with you. He's great in Sherlock. He's very different in the new Star Trek movie. I thought, even though I thought the marketing totally mishandled the whole I Am Khan stuff, he was very good in that role, and he does a good voice work. He's several characters in the new Hobbit series, including Sauron, in the Sauron parts, and
he's Sauron too.
Yeah, and he's Smaug, and so. He's a great actor. Tom Hardy is fantastic in Lawless. So I think he was really acclaimed for The Great Gatsby. I think he was in that as well recently. I might be wrong on that. But I have faith that whoever's going to be that character is going to be the face of the Marvel Universe in the same way that Tony Stark has been. Once he goes through, because I expect that Tony Stark's going to die in Iron Man 2 or Iron Man 3. I'm sorry, in Avengers 2 or Avengers 3. as a rallying point, and that Doctor Strange is going to be the next big one. But I don't know. I mean, I guess we'll see. I trust Marvel generally, although the Ant-Man stuff has me a little worried. So I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt. They've got two great actors, and so looking for great actors, if they keep getting great actors to play in their movies, they're going to be able to avoid a lot of the issues that movies that don't have great actors fall into when they rely on stuff that, you know, you rely on everything else because you don't have great actors, and then if any of that stuff doesn't come through, you end up with a poor quality movie. When you get great actors, they can sell anything, you know.
Absolutely. And then, okay, so, and the last one was, is that, okay, Mike, you were saying that you were going to, I guess the guy who did Sinister was supposed to, I think he was supposed to become the director. So who is it? Who's directing, so he's doing Doctor Strange, right? The guy who did Sinister?
Yeah, the guy who did Sinister is doing Doctor Strange. Scott Derrickson. Mm-hmm. He posted a picture to his Instagram with him holding a Doctor Strange comic and saying, "My next movie is going to be very strange." And then, you know, the same couple hours, a couple places reported that he was going to be the new director. And I think it's been officially confirmed by Marvel now. I'm not positive on that, which is interesting. I have not seen Sinister. And Doctor Strange seems like a really interesting fun to me.
Amy, have you seen Sinister?
I have not.
Ugh. All right, guys. I think that's an assignment for all three of us that we need to go watch about these movies. So, guys, let's go ahead and wrap things up here just a little bit. What's the next big movie that's going to be coming out that we're going to be talking about?
Well, we're me and Amy are sort of out of town for the next couple weeks. Certainly, we're going to do Guardians of the Galaxy at the beginning of August. I know that probably Transformers might be a fun one to do, but I don't know when that's coming out. I think it might be next weekend.
Right. So, well, yeah, Transformers won't be until I guess a couple more weekends. I think just like the end. I think the 27th of June, if I'm not mistaken. And then I don't know if anything's really be going on in July. You know.
Like, so I'll pop one up here. Let's see. We've got in July. So Earth to Echo comes out the first week in July, which I think is going to be really interesting. And Dawn of the Planet of the Apes. Planet of the Apes comes out July 11th. That's the movie in July I'm most interested in talking about if we're going to talk about a movie. So
I am tired of apes taking over the world. When you had Marky Mark at the end of his movie, where he like the doctors take his mask off and he's like, "What?"
Hey, I like that. I like that one.
All right, Amy, because you liked it. I mean, I like Marky Mark, but I was definitely with his character. His character was like, "What?" And I was like in the theater going, "What?
What are these apes doing?
I don't understand." So maybe we can find like a nice TV show to talk about instead of talking about the stupid ape movie. But because you guys want.
How many of the Penny Dreadfuls have there been yet? All right, we've only seen the first one. Is that something, or
all? 5 episodes in. It already got picked up for a second season. It's on Showtime, so that should tell you everything about what could possibly happen with this show. If it can go there. It'll go there with this movie the entire way. So, Penny Dreadfuls, I think absolutely fan. I think that's a really, really great TV show. It's different. It's a better play on that genre than I've seen lately. But guys, I think this is a really, really good review. Again, let's go ahead. We'll recommend definitely going to go see How to Train Your Dragon 2. If you guys haven't gotten a chance to see any of the other movies that we've kind of recommended that we've kind of done in the past, one of the first movies we talked about. What was the first one we talked about? It was,
Spider-Man.
Huh?
Spider-Man.
And then X-Men movie, and then, and here's another one to plug, too. In your city, if there's a Marvel Cinema Live or something going on, is that coming your way? Have you seen that at all, Mike?
Yes, I'm not pleased at all with my timing.
Are you serious?
I'm gonna be in Florida. We're in St. Louis. I'm going to be in Florida in 2 weeks, and we leave the day that the Guardians of the Galaxy 3D event is happening at Hollywood Studios, but I will be at Universal Studios, not at Disney, so I can't go see that. And then 3 days later in Tampa, where my family is from and where you are, Richie, Marvel Cinema Live is showing up for their first show, so I'm missing that too. I think it's coming here in St. Louis sometime in early 2015. So we will check it out, and we will wait for your recommendation, because I assume
the geek in me is pretty excited. I have a friend who's trying to get tickets, but I think I'm going to try and buy tickets anyway. I'm sure it's going to probably be a kid show, but what's the cool thing about it is that you have a mashup of basically the thing that we all want. X-Men, Spider-Man, well, really just Wolverine, Spider-Man, and a whole bunch of, like, Iron Man and Captain America, Hulk, all in one thing together. And from what the people have been talking about, it's a really, really great show, a lot of good stunts, a lot of great special effects. I'm really surprised about how it's going to go down, so maybe we can add that on to the next little talk about the ape thing, the apes learning how to use computers.
Have you seen the trailer to... Have you seen a 3D trailer to the Planet of the Apes?
Yes, or Dawn of the... What is it? Dawn of the Beginning of the Start of the Apes? Isn't that how the title is? Part one?
It's Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, I think, right? Is that it? Dawn?
Yeah. Oh, it really...
Dawn of the Planet of the Apes. That preview is, I think, my favorite preview of all time. I'm not kidding. It's amazing. The music is awesome. The way that preview plays and builds and builds and builds, it's awesome. And I am totally in camp ape. I'm going to be pissed every time an ape dies, and I'm cheering for the apes over the humans. It's awesome.
You're like Mojo Jojo from the Powerpuff Girls. But anyway, ladies and gentlemen, I just want to say again, thank you so much again for checking out the podcast. Remember that we are on Facebook, Twitter, WordPress, the entire way. We got some great reviews that you can get to from our Facebook links. Please check us out. We love, please throw your feedback. You know, are we on the money? Are we getting a little crazy? Because, we're just doing something that we love, and we all hope that you're enjoying it too. So again, on behalf of me, Mike, and Amy, thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you next time.
Bye.
Bye.
You can contact us on Twitter at @ExitTheDonut. Or our email, exitthedonutpodcast@gmail.com. Our website, exitthedonut.wordpress.com. You can also find us on Facebook and Google+. Thanks for listening. Catch you next time.